Take a look at me. You wouldn't, on first sight, imagine that I was a bad neighbor. You wouldn't, right? Right. But my neighbor David thinks that I am a bad neighbor. It began maybe in the autumn, not too long ago, when they moved in. Him and his wife Amy, they've got a little baby who's now just a bit over a year. It was in the autumn when the leaves fall from the trees, doing what leaves are meant to do. They fall to the ground and they litter your lawn. And I rake them all together, and of course my intention is to pick them up and put them in the compost. But maybe I forget, I get distracted, and the leaves may get picked up by the wind and they may blow across my yard and through the slats in the fence over into David's lawn. Now this is a prime offense according to David, because his lawn it's pristine. He's got one of those lawns where all of the flowers are in perfect rows and all of the shrubs have perfect geometric shapes and there's nothing to spoil the form of these shrubs, and the grass is only allowed to grow 2.39 inches or he will bring out any part of his small fleet of lawn mowers. He's got the kind you ride on, the kind that you push, the kind that you crank, the kind that has a plug that you plug in the wall. He likes his power tools. He's got all sorts of them. He's got a hedge trimmer, and he's got a weed whacker, and he's got a border edger thing, and a chainsaw, and he's got a leaf blower. And when he saw that those leaves had landed on his side of the fence, he didn't know I saw him, but he got his leaf blower out and he blew them back through the slats onto my property. So you see what I'm up against with David. He's a perfectionist, and that's about the nicest thing that I can think to say about him. And I'm more casual in my gardening habits. I grow a lot of things, and I have no concept of weed. If a plant wants to grow, it's a volunteer, and I say, welcome and thank you. You don't know how useful any sort of a plant might be. I grow lots of kinds of trees, and their roots, their bark, their leaves, they all have value. They all have something that may be useful about them. And I grow different sorts of plants. I grow vegetables, of course, and different shrubs and bushes. I grow things that people wouldn't necessarily know were useful. Like most people know the chamomile, you can make a nice comforting tea with chamomile. I also grow comfrey root. If you take the root of that plant and you boil it to extract its essence from it, and then mix it with some Vaseline, put it on your upper lip. If you've had an injury or if you've had a surgery, it will help speed your recovery about 4 or 5 times faster. Just right there, just. I grow marigolds, common, friendly, cheerful little flower. But most people don't know that if you take the petals of the marigold flower and you sprinkle them all around the foundation of your house, it will protect you and all of your family from any evil spells that might be cast against you. Now, one day, I was listening to a sound I didn't recognize, zooka, zooka. And I turn and discover that there is David, and he's got a bow saw, and he's trimming my Japanese maple. I asked him why, and he said, well, you know, there's some of the branches that are hanging over the top of the over my side of the fence, and it's scratching the top of my pickup. And I thought, your pickup? This is a utility vehicle. This is not ruining the finish on his Porsche. And I wanted to be a good neighbor, so I didn't say anything. And I said, well, you know, I'll try and get it trimmed sooner next time. And then a few days later, zooka, zooka again, he's working on my fruitless mulberry. Now, it's called fruitless mulberry because it does, in fact, grow fruits. But then they drop off the tree while they're still immature. So they don't get purple and juicy and messy. They just drop down on the ground and maybe bounce off his car. And they're eaten by the critters. You know, chipmunks and squirrels and birds eat them. And if the critters don't get them, they'll decompose and go back to nature, which is exactly what they're supposed to do. So what's the problem with the fruitless mulberry? This time I told him that if he had any compelling need to trim my landscape again, he should come and talk to me first. Well, he didn't. Next time he sent his wife, Amy. Amy, who had never had a word from me before except a quick hello, goodbye, as she's coming and going in her car. Well, this day she comes over, she's got her baby on her hip, and very, very patronizing, and if it wouldn't be too much trouble, do you think that you could arrange to have the branches on that tree trimmed? And I go and I look, and it's my black walnut, beautiful, big, old, stately tree. And I look, and it's at the second story level where there's some of the branches that are just coming over onto her side. Well, what's the problem with that? It's dripping sap onto her car. I'm fuming now because I looked at where her car was parked. It's just at a place in the driveway where the driveway opens out and gets wide before the garage, and there she could easily park four cars lined up together, but she's got to park right underneath the black walnut. She says, well, you know, it's dripping, and I have to take it to the car wash a couple times a week, and the cost is really starting to add up. Okay, I didn't want to yell at her, especially with the baby right there. And I told her that I could really see that this was causing a problem for her. And then I put it out of my mind. Until a couple days later, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm sound asleep. And I hear this racket that's outside. It's some sort of a motor. It's some sort of a roaring sound that's going on. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. And I look out my window, and there is some sort of big rig with these articulated arms and a basket up at the top that is a cherry picker. And he's in the basket, David, with a chainsaw, and he's working on my black walnut tree. I lose it. I jump out of bed, and I get to the window, and I'm kind of waving at him. I can't get his attention. I go downstairs. I'm half naked in my nightgown and bare feet. My face is red. I'm dripping sweat. I'm just so excited. And he deigns to turn the thing off and answer me. And there he is, standing way up here. And he's in this power position, you know. And I'm down there going crazy and losing control. And he says, well, you know, we told you that it was dripping sap. And I did lose it. I was not the good neighbor that day. I called him some things that I can't repeat today. And I was kind of paralyzed. So I turned around, went back into the house, and he carried on with butchering my black walnut tree. I sat down, and I listened. And I heard the crashing of the branches as they came down through the tree and landed on the fence. And I heard him loading up all the bits and pieces and taking that big rig away. And I kept sitting. And I went outside. I surveyed the damage. And there I stand at the end of the fence line. And I can see on my side, everything is beautiful, lush, and green, and healthy. And on his side of the fence, it's a perfect plane he's created right here. On his side, there's nothing but David's own personal airspace. And I looked at that black walnut, and there was one wound that was high enough up, or close enough, that I could reach it, and it was dripping sap. And I just had this sense of, well, this is this tree's life blood seeping away. And it was in the morning, in public, and I found myself reaching out and putting my arms around this tree and putting my cheek up against the bark. And I swear I could hear what felt like screams of agony from this old tree. And I went inside and I sat down. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I thought, and afternoon became night. And night became morning. And I had stayed up all night long thinking about this tree and this neighbor. And about 9 o'clock, I knew what to do. I went into my kitchen, and I got out one of my oldest recipe books, and I started gathering ingredients from my cupboard. And I started to bake. I baked for a couple hours. And at about 4, I went over to Amy, and I brought her a nice, fresh loaf of homemade bread. And she was delighted to get it because she knew that meant I wasn't carrying a grudge. She said that she and David would eat it that night. And I went home, And I sat in my chair and I looked through the window. The blinds were shut, but enough of a crack was there that I could look out and see through their picture window. I watched David come home, and he sat down to dinner, and they had the baby in the high chair, and they each had a couple of slices of bread. After dinner, they went into the living room. They played with the baby on the rug, watched a little TV. About 9 o'clock, I see that the lights went out in the living room. They must have gone upstairs. And then I see that the master bedroom light goes on, the nursery light goes on, the nursery light goes off, the master bedroom light goes off. I got up, went into the kitchen, got out my little knapsack, collected a few things I was going to need, walked across the lawn, stopped at their front door, opened up my knapsack, pulled out some dried sorrel that I had collected on the night of the summer solstice moon with a silver knife just for this purpose. I took out that dried sorrel and I rubbed it on their front door. I knew it would crumble and kind of drift away and wouldn't be noticed. Probably, knowing this family, they probably might have noticed it. And then I listened while I heard the satisfying click, click of the deadbolt lock opening. And I went inside. And I walked across the living room floor and I went up the stairs. And I stopped at the door of the master bedroom. And I listened and I heard the sounds of their deep sleeping breaths. I knew they'd be asleep. The celery seed and the bread took care of that. And then I went into the baby's room. And I saw the baby lying in her cradle, asleep. But as I leaned over the cradle, I saw the baby's eyes just flutter open a little bit and close. And a little spit bubble formed on her lips. And I went into my knapsack and I got out a bottle of holly water. I opened it up. And I poured it in a circle all around that little baby's body. I knew that would keep her safe. And then I went into the parents' bedroom. And it wasn't hard to find what I was looking for. David has short, dark hair. And Amy has long, blonde hair. So on David's pillow, I located 3 short, dark hairs, and I put them into an envelope that I had brought to collect them. And I went downstairs, and I went into the yard, and I went up to that black walnut tree, and I located that wound that I could reach, and I took those 3 hairs, and I stuck them into the wound, and they stuck fast into the sap. And then I went home, and that night I slept very, very soundly. Now, things began to get interesting in the neighborhood after that. We started to hear sounds of yelling and hysterical laughter and tears sometimes coming from David and Amy's house. And things began to come flying out the front door. We'd see CDs, we'd see books, we'd see linens, we'd see pots and pans. We saw the little table clock that they had on the hall table one day. And Amy would come out and she'd collect all those things and bring them back in and look around to make sure none of the neighbors had seen. One time, I saw David, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, stark naked, running around on the lawn, and Amy came and collected him and brought him back into the house. It was weirdest at night. In the summertime when it was hot and we would have the windows open in both houses so you could hear what was going on in your neighbor's house, that's when you would hear these kind of whimpers like a baby, or kind of giggling, strange, weird giggling, or sometimes it sounds like an animal kind of snuffling at a trough. I went out recently and I checked on that black walnut tree. It won't be long now. It's starting to heal over. The wound is beginning to heal over as bark grows. It's an old, old spell, this one. If you take the hair of your enemy and you stick it into the wound of a tree, when that wound heals over, your enemy will be driven insane. So think of it. The pressure on the skull as the brain is slowly and steadily squeezed, and your enemy has no idea why this is happening. But I know. He butchered my damn tree.